For today's episode, we wanted to give you a heads up that there is some adult language. While nothing is vulgar or crude, we did want to make you aware in case you're listening with younger kids. With that disclaimer in place, please enjoy today's episode.
Got a call, you know, from dad, and he's like, well, I need to see you in the morning. I need to talk to you.
And is that normal for him to do that kind of thing?
No.
Okay.
No, I mean, right away, as I'm, you know, I've got like 6-7 hours to drive home, and I'm going through my head, and I'm like, all right, what the hell did you do?
What's up, everyone? You're listening to the Do Hard Things podcast by Elite SRS. The purpose of this show is to share stories of hardship and victory as an encouragement for those in the middle of their own hard thing. Because we know hardship produces perseverance, which produces character, which ultimately produces hope. Today's guest is Todd Poquette. Todd is the director of adventure for a nonprofit called the 906 Adventure Team, which serves youth by encouraging them to get out of their comfort zone and do hard things. Todd shares about his decision to stay true to his values and how it cost him his relationship with his father. He reminds us that difficulties are going to come and that we need other people to grow and get through them. If you enjoy the show, please don't forget to subscribe and leave a review so more people can be encouraged by the stories we share. Now here's the conversation with Todd Poquette. All right, got Todd Poquette on the Do Hard Things podcast and excited to have you. Thanks for hopping on.
Hey, thanks for reaching out and asking me to get on.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to hearing your story. Before we get there, I'd love to give some people context for who you are. And the best way I do that, I think, is asking the question, when people ask you what you do, how do you answer that?
So my response is that I'm the director of adventure for 906 Adventure Team. And then the next question is, well, what is the director? Yeah. And it's funny because, you know, then my response is, well, I have no idea. I made that up. but seriously, in all seriousness, what really the way I view myself and my role as a director of adventure is I'm a facilitator. Mm. Okay. I think I've kind of come to this place in my life where in a number of roles, I really look at myself just purely as facilitating certain results. You know, if you look at the definition, I actually wrote it down just so I could hit it accurately. You know, facilitate someone who helps bring about an outcome, such as learning, productivity, or communication, by providing indirect or unobtrusive assistance, guidance, or supervision. And I really think through our nonprofit and through the events and the experiences that we create, what we're doing is, what I should say is I'm trying to help facilitate development of a community through experiences that are designed to break their attachment to everything that prevents us from coming together.
Hmm. What are some of the things that prevent coming together?
Well, I mean, we see it every day right now, right? I think our labels, I think the world is full of ways that we might label one another. Even something as simple as, you know, people will say, oh, you're that bike guy. Well, okay. So, I mean, as a cyclist, you know, automatically I am thought to be at odds with automobile operators or hikers, walkers. You know what I mean? It's, we have the way we cling to definitions of our labels, I think is a detriment for us. So that's why through these experiences we create, whether it's through youth programming for kids or through the nationally sort of national scale events that we run, we're trying to break those down. And the way we do it is by creating hardship and forcing people to work together.
Yeah, not many other tools out there that are as effective as hardship, I think. Have you guys experimented with other ways to do it and just like, nope, this is it? Or were you all in on hardship from the beginning?
Yeah, always all in on hardship. Probably because, you know, just in my life experience, that has been my greatest teacher, is just really screwing stuff up and learning from it and being like, okay, we're not going to do that again.
Yeah.
But like, you know, the example is that we say this at, so Margie Gesick, Margie is M-A-R-J-I, Gesick is G-E-S-I-C-K. That is a 100-mile mountain bike slash running endurance event we run through 906 Adventure Team. And they kind of the inside joke, but it's not a joke, is this event was identified 5 years ago by Jeremiah Bishop in his own words, saying he thinks it's the hardest single day mountain bike event in the country.
Mm.
And this is a guy who's raced all over the world.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's hard shit to do on a bike, he's done it probably.
Right. Time, right. Yeah.
So the joke is, because it is hard, this event has literally been designed to break you. But we always say how once you get into the Margie, nobody's talking about their politics. Nobody, there's no party lines. You know, there's all this stuff that we get entangled on that divides us. When you get punched in the face and the guy next to you is getting punched in the face, you figure out how to work together real fast.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other unique things that we do at the events is we sort of downplay the podium, and we've sort of leveled the playing field, saying, you know, in the same respect that the elites, the Jeremiah Bishops and those men and women operate at the highest of highest levels, and that's incredibly impressive and worthy of our respect. In the same way, that man or that woman who stays out on the course for 25 hours, knowing when they get to the finish line, the only people that will be there is like me, my wife, five volunteers, and their husband or wife.
Right.
That takes, I'll tell you what, man, that takes some resolve and some grittiness to stay out there.
Mm, yeah, no kidding. Yeah. So how many times have you done it yourself, I'm guessing? And yes. What, pick like three words to describe it that aren't just saying it's hard. Like, give people a little context, insider view on the experience that you guys have created.
Three words. Okay. Absolutely fucking relentless.
So why? Is it hills? Is it mud? Is it rain?
Yes,
is it?
The Margie, we are super blessed in Marquette County to have what I would call a one of a kind course. You know, from start to finish, it's all uphill. And we did that on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Just so we could say it was all uphill.
Yeah.
But the thing with Marquette County is that, you know, you're not going to get hit with a 10-mile climb like you might out west.
Right.
Because, you know, when you do the 10-mile climb out west, then after that, you've got a 10-mile descent. Here, it's like you have for 100 miles, these short, bursty, rock-strewn, boulder-ridden, root-infested climbs, it's like you got to pin it as though you're doing an interval, you know, for 5 minutes. And then when you get to the top of that climb, you're going down, again, a brutal, rock-strewn, rooty, like Carrie Laurie, who's a very well-known endurance event in the country, said, there are no free miles in this event. Meaning, even when you're going downhill, you're getting your ass kicked.
Yeah.
That is completely true. I mean, hell, the DNF rate since 2015 on the run, the 100-mile run, is 80%.
Are you serious?
I'm not kidding. 80% of the people who show up never see the finish line.
And how many people are doing it in a given year?
On the running side, this year, I think we sent out, I'm going to say 50.
Yeah.
Mile runners. Actually, this year, we had our best finish rate ever. I think 30% finished. The bikers, the total event this year was 1,300 people. So it's very bike heavy. The 100-mile runners start on Friday. And then the 100-mile bikers and everybody else starts Saturday morning. And everybody's got to be done by Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m.
Okay.
So if you're 5 miles from the finish line and you've been out there 25 hours, at 8:30, we're packing up.
Yeah. Finish on your own.
Like, I mean, if you've come that far, you better.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how long it takes you at that point.
Exactly.
So talk about how you got involved in all of this. Like, it's an interesting job to have and an interesting organization to be a part of. But what was your trajectory to get to this point?
I did a variety of things professionally. I've done everything from, you know, a short order cook to a delivery driver for Cisco, not the tech company, the worldwide food distributor.
Yeah.
And I worked with Cisco from the very beginning, entry-level position, being a part-time driver, culminating with being a district sales manager, and then deciding at 38, it's like, well, you know, is this what I want for the rest of my life? Now let's go try something else. I've worked in retail, which, you know, retail is really a great place to learn how to interact with people and just interface with the public. Love that job. I've done a lot of really fun stuff. I've done a lot of really shitty stuff, but I always found a way to enjoy it. And when I left the corporate world, it was really because I realized at, you know, nearly 40 that I'm going to work 80 hours a week, no matter what I do, because it's just how I'm wired.
Yeah.
And when I say that, like, I'm not trying to glamorize, you know, working that much, because I actually enjoy whatever I'm doing. I enjoy it. Mm-hmm. So even when I am working, no matter how good or bad it is, I don't know. I guess I'm just weird.
You're wired to work.
I just like doing it, you know? So I ended up leaving Cisco because I thought, well, maybe my time's better spent on things impacting the community. And I ended up going to work for a restaurant group that happened to be in my district, which was one of our largest accounts. I had a good rapport with the owner and went to work with them. I think I did that for 5 years. And during that 5-year period of time, I was also allocating some of my time to starting a nonprofit. Essentially, it was just, I wanted to volunteer outside of work. I wanted to give back to the community. But I approached, here's the thing, like, for people who are always looking for like their passion or their purpose, or trying to look for that thing that really lights them up and really just makes them want to get up every morning. I approached my volunteer gig with this nonprofit that I was creating with the same dedication and fervor that I approached my professional career. Mm-hmm. And in effect, what happened is being a really high performing volunteer turned into a job. And, you know, it's interesting, I guess, to point that out, because I think that one way I could have gone at it, and I think that a lot of people go at volunteerism or volunteering is, and nothing wrong with this, but let's just call a spade a spade. I think they look at it as resume fodder.
Yeah.
Or as a way to get involved and then integrate with other members in the community to further whatever it is they do, whatever their profession is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of sales folks that, you know, stumble into volunteerism. And there's a
stumble
reason.
they
stumble in. So that stuff looks good on resumes. And you know what? If that's what you're after, all the more power to you. But when I got into it, I think in reflection, and this is true yet today, I wasn't in it for that. I got into it for the kids and guys like me, women like me, just normal everyday people who didn't really have an opportunity or a cycling group that they could be part of, or a community group. I guess it's not even cycling, because we have cycling and running that's part of it, men, women, and children. So it was really just having a community that you aligned with. And that's always been the priority, is the people have always been the priority. And again, that's what took me down the path. And it just eventually turned into where I was sitting in, I think, 2018, got a great job with this restaurant group and this nonprofit that was demanding more time than I had to give, and I had to make a choice, you know. And when I made the choice to leave that restaurant group, there wasn't even an approved salary from the board of directors.
Like, just like, this is what I'm doing, here we go,
this is what I'm doing, you know. Just gonna jump and see where it goes.
Wow. Well, it's interesting, you know, that you're talking about the volunteer stuff, because I think it kind of gets at something that I came to realize 3 or 4 years ago, because I believe firmly that people do their best work and enjoy what they're doing the most when they have a mindset, not like, what can I get from this company or this employer, but what can I give?
You nailed it. I love that. Yeah. I mean, that is what it's all about. And I think even for people who maybe they don't go down a volunteer path and have it turn into a job, you know, people who find a career and they're in that career based more off of what they can give than what they can get, they're highly successful.
Yeah.
Because I think, like you said, the universe has a way of paying it back to you.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense, but it seems to work.
Yeah. It's a little backwards, right? You're not being self-serving, and somehow it ends up serving you at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, it's upside down economy, but, yep. Okay. So before I get to the pivotal central question for the podcast, I wanted to ask a little bit more about the 906 Adventure. So we talked about Margie Gessick, but what else do you guys do and put on that people probably, if they've never heard of it before, have no context for? Because that's kind of like the prime event, but there's more to it. So what else you guys have going on?
Yeah, you know, so on the, there's three what I call productions that we put on that are really primary revenue generators for the organization. We do a lot of, we're a nonprofit, so we do a lot of grant work when we have equipment specific needs specific to our youth programs. So mm-hmm. That's where we'll leverage grant writing. We've got a lot of great sponsors. We have a lot of great community partners. However, I think we might be a little different in that we don't spend quite as much time chasing money. And frankly, that's probably been in part because we've found a way to generate our own money. But that is nice, because as a nonprofit, then we have some autonomy. You know, we don't get beholden to, I mean, we had a situation last year where a sponsor was trying to sort of push their agenda onto us, and really unfairly, I do believe, and misplaced. So we don't have to deal with a lot of that, right?
Yeah,
because we can generate our own income, which is really unique. So the three events would be Polar Roll, that is a winter fat bike / snowshoe adventure that happens in February, and our trail organizations here in Marquette County, the NTN, which is the No Cayman on Trail Network, and RAMBA, which is the Range Area Mountain Bike Association. They are probably the premier fat bike trail / snowshoe trail grooming organizations in the country. We talked about Margie Gessick. The other event we have, which runs in July every year, is called the Crusher. And I took gravel racing, I'll say in air quotes, gravel racing, I took that and turned it into what we call enhanced gravel, which means it's the worst gravel experience you're ever going to have.
Sound like they're geared to punish you a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, they are. You know, I mean, all of them are designed to take people, even the enhanced gravel, like there's a lot of what I would call psychological games being played. Okay. So, typically enhanced is a big word right now, right? And in all sorts of industries, all of a sudden, if you go into the Holiday Inn, you don't just get housekeeping. Now they've got a sign on your bed that you're going to get enhanced housekeeping, which generally enhanced means that the product that you're about to enjoy is better than the average product of that nature that you would experience, right?
Right.
The mind game with Crusher is, we don't tell people that we like terrible things. So enhanced gravel to us is bad times two.
Yeah. Enhanced, it goes the wrong direction.
In a good way.
In a weird, flipped around, tornado kind of experience. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Well, so, and even just the description you said, like they can go out and if they come back, they come back. Like psychological game in and of itself, that statement, you know. Good luck. Yeah. I hope we see you again.
Yes, yeah. Good luck.
Yeah, it's reminding me a little bit. I talked to a guy named Mark Devine, who he does Navy SEAL training, and he has these like events that are designed as endurance that force you to your limit where you need team to get through it. And the longest one, I think, is 50 hours. And you're awake the whole time, right? And, you know, you're getting water thrown in your face and crawling. It's just like what you would imagine a Navy SEAL training to be, but for 50 straight hours, you know?
So his events or whatever he's doing there, who is signing up to do that? What's the person look like?
You know, I didn't ask him that question. I've since looked at it in more detail. And it looks a lot like an average person who is desiring to like get out of a rut, essentially. Okay. So they have like a training program that you are supposed to go into and go through leading up to the event. Because if you just try to tackle it without any kind of preparation, you won't be successful. And so they have and they have scaled up versions. That's kind of the pinnacle. Yeah,
that's fantastic to hear, because the thing we hear at our events is that, like when we were at Margie Camp this year in June, it's a camp that we do to prepare them for Margie Gessick. So they come for the weekend, we get them ready, and then they come back in September and they try to finish. But we've had, you know, the comment a lot of times we'll hear from people like at camp when you're just hanging out is they'll look around them at, you know, this event that's been described as one of the hardest, if not the hardest, single day mountain bike events in the country, and they say these are not your typical, you know, elite level type A competitive cyclists and runners. Like you look around and it's just regular men and women with their families lining up to do this ridiculous task. And that's really, I think, what's made it all special is who's showing up. We're somehow talking regular people into showing up and towing the line.
Yeah. Well, there's something about it, right? Like I think as a human, we want to see what we're capable of, but we almost like, it's why personal trainers exist, right? Like we need somebody to push us beyond our comfort level, because most people are not inherently capable of doing that on their own. And, you know, those people probably don't need to come to the event, right? Like they're just going to go do that kind of crazy thing on their own. Whereas the person who would need the personal trainer, who needs somebody to push them, they got to sign up for something like this to get to that kind of a level of discomfort and difficulty.
Yeah.
If you enjoy the podcast, please do us a favor and head to your favorite podcast platform and leave us a review. It helps a ton. And there's a reason all the podcasts you listen to ask you to do this. We want to continue to encourage people in the middle of their difficult seasons, and your ratings help boost our podcast visibility and the stories of our guests. Did you pause it and leave a review? If so, thank you. All right. Back to our conversation. Well, now I want to ask you the prime question for the podcast and the purpose of this, which is you have a story of a difficult thing you've been through and that you've grown from. And there's somebody listening to this that's in the middle of a hard season right now, and they need some perspective and they need some hope. And that's why we ask the question. So question is, what's the hardest thing in your life that you wouldn't take back?
That was a tough one. So I had mentioned I worked for Cisco.
Mm-hmm.
And this is by far the hardest thing in the world that's ever happened to me. I had to make a decision that was the hardest. And even today, as hard as the fallout from the decision's been, I still wouldn't take it back, because it's that decision put me where I am today.
Mm.
So I worked for Cisco, and so did my dad. And okay. 2009, I was on a backpacking trip in the boundary waters, and on my home, and on my way home, got a call, you know, from dad, and he's like, "Hey, where are you at?" And I'm like, "Well, I'm just leaving Ely with Minnesota. You know, I'll be home later tonight." been out backpacking in the backcountry for a few days. And he's like, well, I need to see you in the morning. I need to talk to you. And it was, you know, it was a little more somber than that. And I was like, all right, you know, we set it up. I hung up.
And is that normal for him to do that kind of thing?
No.
Okay.
No, I mean, right away, as I'm, you know, I've got like 6-7 hours to drive home and I'm going through my head. I'm like, all right, what the hell did you do?
Yeah. What have I done?
Yeah.
What do I need to be apologizing for?
Yeah. This is not normal. Well, anyway, long story short, I get home, meet him the next morning, and come to find out that something happened. He'd been suspended by senior management. He was a senior manager, but he was on suspension, and he felt within a day or two that they were going to let him go. He had been suspended for, I think, a week, and I did not know that. Although yeah. I had been gone for, you know, part of that, so there's probably a reason I didn't know. Mm-hmm. But during the time that I was gone and he was looking at the fact that he thought he was going to be let go, he got proactive and he reached out to the company that we competed with, and he started negotiating to go to work for them, and he negotiated taking me with him before he talked to me. So that's what he laid on me that morning. And you know, I mean, in that morning, what are you going to do? Your dad is telling you he's going to lose his job, and you know, he wants you to go with him to this new company, and you're going to work together, and there's a whole story to it. And it's like, you're too shell-shocked to do anything but sort of operate off of what has been wired into you, right? And it's your dad. So I said, okay, that was a Friday. And that day after I left where we had met, I called my direct supervisor at Cisco and resigned, quit. No notice, nothing. Monday, we went to the competitor. Human resources began onboarding. And I had already through the weekend, after I had more time to sort of grasp the gravity of what was happening and sort of weigh out, you know, ramifications for me, because again, at that time I was, well, I think mid-30s, because it was 2009. You know, I'm looking at like, man, I got 25, 30 years left here of work. He's got 5. This is a huge, huge change for me. Not, in my opinion, not as significant for him, because he's on his way out. He's going to be done soon.
Yeah.
Not to mention, the thing I was struggling with the most was the platform that he'd been with the company 30 years. And the thing that was hardest for me was that he had operated as a leader on a platform of family and loyalty. And over the years of people working for him, again, this is in a very high pressured sales environment, we had had people who were part of the quote family try to leave to go to work for that competitor themselves. And they got talked back into the family based on loyalty and family, right?
Yeah.
So I really struggled with that, because I thought, you know, at the end of the day, when we go to work for this company, we're in a profession, again, sales, but it was 100% commission. So if we start competing directly the following week with the company that we've served for 30 years, the people that are going to pay the price, it's not the people in Houston, Texas, you know, the people who don't know us. It's the people who've been dedicated to us themselves for the entire time that I had lived, that he had been part of the company. It's like,
yeah,
that's who's going to suffer. Because if you take sales from them up here, that's their commissions.
That's right.
So anyway, Monday, went to get onboarded. And when I went back to the hotel room that night, I knew, because we were supposed to go finish Tuesday, I knew I wasn't going back Tuesday. I couldn't do it. I just could not live with it. I could not, you know, it just felt like everything, every premise I had been had raised on and worked for had been just, it's like, just kidding. We didn't mean any of that.
Yeah.
So I walked into the hotel room on that Tuesday morning And I had to tell my mom and my dad were both there. And I said, I'm not going back. By far the most gut-wrenching. I can't even tell you what it was like. It was brutal.
Yeah.
But I left. And then the twist in the story is went back to work for Cisco and worked, unfortunately, head to head against my father for 3 years.
Really?
We were opposing regional managers in the same district, going head to head. And, you know, I'll tell you, we have maybe talked twice since that day when I didn't go back.
Really?
And that's tough.
Yeah.
That is tough. But you know what? It was a choice. My life would be completely different today if I didn't do that. And there would be a lot of people's lives that would be different with it.
Mm-hmm.
I still feel today that in the framework of serving a greater good, it was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, we could have worked together and worked together very well and spent 5 years together, essentially undoing everything that we had worked to do for, you know, 30. That's not the legacy I wanted to leave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
wow.
That's the hard thing. I mean, when you sent me the question, as soon as I saw it, I was like, well, I already know what the answer
is. Yeah, there it is right there.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, thanks for sharing, man. I mean, anytime you involve family, right? It's a vulnerable, close to home thing. So I personally have a healthy family life growing up, and I do now, but the relationship with my dad was never like very emotional. You know, it's super logical, disciplined, rigid, structured. And so relationships between father, son, father, daughter, and like a father's impact is really significant to me. And yeah. So I'm listening to you say that, like, man, your dad, like it's your dad, you know? Yeah. And I can't imagine what that's like because it sounds like, you know, leading up to that, you had a pretty close relationship. I mean, you guys worked together in the same company, you know?
Yeah, it wasn't a perfect relationship, like any, you know, it had its moments. It was strained. I mean, we were not strained at the, it was on and off through time strained. He raised me.
Yeah. Okay?
We're very much wired the same way. And that's why at times we would, you know, butt heads. And I don't think that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
I think that's a good thing. I mean, I have the same relationship at times, you know, with my boys, that I'm raising them to be independent, free, strong thinkers. And sometimes that brings us to blows.
Yeah.
I don't know that he'll ever see it this way, but I feel like in the decision that I made, that I did honor everything that he had taught me for 35 years. I truly do feel that way.
Yeah.
It's just that it was really an odd spot to get put in. I mean, he didn't have to ever put me in that spot, honestly. You know, he could have just, he could have negotiated his way out, and then we could have had a conversation about it. And the agreement could have been like, no matter, like, we know this is going to be hard, and no matter what happens, you know, we're going to be together. Like there were other alternatives, although at that time, I'm sure he probably felt there weren't.
Right. Yeah. So when you go back to that, you know, that Friday meeting with your dad, because it sounds like, man, and it seems like I'm extrapolating out, but it sounds like you're like a all in kind of a person. So like your dad was like, hey, this is what we're doing. And you're like, all right. And then you quit, you know, like you just quit like right on the spot from this job that you had. Have you like played that back in your head? Like, this is what I should have done. This, like, what'd you learn from, that 3-4 day window of time, and how quickly it moved, and the things that you did or didn't do? And, you know, like, let's say you found yourself in that exact same situation again, what would you do differently?
Nothing.
Really?
No, I wouldn't. Like I said, I still think I wish, you know, here, this is not realistic to say this. My answer would be, I wish it hadn't happened.
Yeah.
Right. I wish that the decision hadn't been forced, meaning, again, there were alternative ways of played that out from his end. But nonetheless, it is what it is. And if you said I can play this back to that day and you can make a different choice, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
And again, I do feel that it was, you know, I do feel like he'd raised me to, on a basis or a foundation of family and loyalty. That's what he preached for 30 years to me and every guy and woman who worked for him. And I followed the company line. It's just that it ended up being the company he wasn't working for anymore.
Right. Right.
Yeah. You know, a friend of mine, David Kate, who he used to live in the States here with us, and now he's over in Germany with his wife. But, you know, I've told him, we've talked about it before, because he kind of subscribes to the same line of thought, as kind of being sure to remind yourself every day that you're not an expert in anything. You haven't figured it all out. There's a lot you don't know. You just don't know what it is.
Yep.
Right. So it's like every day is a new opportunity to be surprised by, oh, wow, I didn't know that. And now I do.
Right.
And it's just, I don't know. It makes every day exciting to get up and get after, because just know shit is going to, if you're getting out of your comfort zone, there is absolutely no doubt you're going to run into stuff on a daily basis that you don't know how to do or react to.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be very informative and you're going to learn from it.
Yeah. And that's the humility that, like, when you have the humility in the midst of the uncomfortableness, you learn, right? I think, like, when you've got the cockiness, you just kind of like will your way through it. But you're not agile or nimble and willing to adjust. You just are trying to like steamroll through something, and eventually you're going to run out of energy. But if you can have the humbleness to adjust your path or change the way you're approaching it, like, you just have a longer runway at the end of the day, and you can get more done.
Yeah. I mean, even, you know, in the restaurant business, well, with like, this is true in any business, but, you know, in the restaurant business, there's obviously a lot of strong personalities, you know, like for me as a young mid 30s district sales manager, who even, you know, they knew the history. They knew that my dad had been let go. He went to work for Reinhardt. They knew I stayed and competed against him. There were some of them who felt that that was the ultimate dishonor of my father. And so they knew that. They knew that I hadn't sold before. And, you know, they'd been running their restaurant 30 years, and they'd have the same kind of take, like when I'd go in with a sales rep to sit down at the table and talk to them about their business and how we can help them. I mean, their first question is like, how the hell are you going to help me? Yeah. You've never even done what the guy that you're supervising has done. How can you help me? And it was just, it was the same response that I had for the sales rep. It's like, listen, it doesn't take a lot of skill to come in here and ask you questions, maybe even some you haven't asked yourself, and then collaboratively working through and finding the answers to those questions that are going to help your business.
Like, right.
I don't feel like I need 20 years of sales background to come in and ask you questions that are genuinely interested in just helping you be better. Right. Yeah. It really just takes an interest in you and seeing you succeed.
Right.
It's a simple formula.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to
be complicated.
We overcomplicate sometimes what it takes to be successful with people.
Yeah. I mean, it's a, you know, if I was trying to simplify it, it is a genuine care for the other person and a willingness to listen, to like understand what those things are that they need. Right. It's a servant posture.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I want to go back to the Monday or no, the Tuesday morning in the hotel. When you, and I'm not asking you to like say what you said, I couldn't even tell you. So I'm not asking you to fill that in, but I am curious about the relationship with your mom, because your mom was there and you know, she in that instance got put, I'm sure, in a really hard place of like, well, I'm married, but this is my son. Like, What's your relationship like with your mom? What was that like going through that? If you can share it, maybe you can't, but.
Oh, no, I don't mind sharing because I mean, the whole idea here is to share experiences to help other people, right?
Yeah.
Well, the experience, the relationship with my mom today is in the same place that my relationship with my dad is, you know, you know, you got to keep in mind. And I have not, there's been times in the past where I was not as at peace with the way things are today. I haven't always been at this point with it, but I can honestly, kind of like how I've been explaining to you, or we were talking about doing hard things and how it's almost like I feel you have to be able to not only see like this do hard things or whatever it is you want to believe in and push, you have to be able to see the oppositional position to it, like, you know, the opposing truth of doing hard things. So whereas I felt like I had my position and what I did made sense, I need to be able to see his position, their position, and why they thought what he had tried to do made sense. And I think the thing they remember is my parents, that it's old school. And the old school thought was there is just a line in the sand and you don't turn your back on family. You don't turn your back on family regardless of what family does. That to me is problematic because, I mean, that's how we actually end up sort of where we are right now in the world, where if people can get away with things and do things and you've got to maintain your allegiance no matter what it is, there's a problem because now there's no character ethic, there's no character rules. And I think it just turns into the Wild West. So, you know, she fell in line with my dad and you know what? I love my parents. I'm glad she did.
Yeah.
Last thing that I would have wanted out of it would be that they're not together.
Right.
Right. So, yeah. As painful as it is, there is, I guess, some satisfaction in knowing they're together. How could I ask for anything more? I really can't.
Yeah. I've got two other questions. So is there a tension in you that exists, at any point in the, you know, years that have passed since of like, I want to reconcile this, or like, this is just the way it is and kind of letting like it be, until they come and reckon, like, what, is there a tension there at all for you?
You know, there's so much time has passed. I mean, I'm not even angry. I'm not saying that he is. It's so much time has passed. I wouldn't even know what to be mad about anymore. You know, at this point, it's just like, listen, you got a 19-year-old grandson, you got a 12-year-old grandson, you have a son, you have a daughter-in-law. We're on the clock here. Let's just fucking figure it out. And you know, also it wouldn't have been any good if I just sit here and, you know, beat myself up about the whole thing and just go into a spiral, right?
Yep.
You know, right. And then 906 Adventure Team doesn't exist. The events don't exist. All the people that we're reaching across the country aren't reached. I mean,
absolutely. So you kind of touched on it. I wanted to ask really quickly, like with your kids, the impact that that's had on your family and how you've navigated that, like any specific approach you've taken?
We've been open about it. We've been transparent about it, not gone into obviously a lot of details about it, but we've not tried to hide it. And because, you know, the things that we try to hide end up, right, it's, it kind of turns into cancer.
Yeah.
And it just, it ends up becoming a bigger negative because it infects things. So there's conversation about it. There's just always like the dialogue in our house is always very, I don't know what the word is, pragmatic. You know, we just call it what it is. It's like, yeah, this isn't ideal. This isn't maybe the normal family experience. But we are going to make the best of it, and we can choose to have it define us in a negative way, or we can overcome it. It's a choice.
Yeah.
And the boys have been really, I mean, Stacy does a great job with them. You know, her parents are very active in their life. And They've been Kathy and Gary have been just amazing. The kids are totally good.
Yeah.
Totally good.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just honest conversation.
Yeah. It's yes. I would say always have honest conversation with your kids about stuff. Don't sugarcoat it. I mean, keep it age appropriate, but you know, don't sugarcoat it. Also, I mean, you know, there's no reason to sit in front of the kids and, you know, be slinging, you know, shade at, you know, grandma and grandpa. I mean, it's just, it is what it is. Here's what happened. it's not ideal. Move on.
Yep. Yep. Ask questions if you got them.
Yeah.
And we'll do our best to answer them. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Give them the resources to process it. So,
yeah.
So you've given a decent amount of advice kind of sprinkled in as you've been talking. But is there anything, like, somebody's in the middle of their own hard season right now listening to this, and maybe it's the same, maybe it's like a strained relationship with a parent or some other family member, but maybe it's something totally different. Like, what advice, what's one piece of advice that you would have for somebody in a hard season?
You know, I'm going to tie this back to Margie Gessick, because okay. This is the truth. Margie Gessick is hard. Life is hard. Right.
Yep.
So we were at Margie camp this year. I was talking to Jan Rubel. Jan was one of the coaches. Jan's done the event a bunch of times. He's buckled. He's one of the very few elite people that have buckled. And we were sort of having this conversation about how there's just this wide range of elites, all the way to people who might have pulled their bike out of the shed on Friday to ride the, you know, the hardest mountain bike race in the country on Saturday.
Yeah.
And how the people underneath the elites, or here, everybody, whether you're in the Margie Gessick or you're at the mall next to a bunch of people or at Target or at Walmart or at work, everybody has a tendency, when the weight of the world's on them, to think that they've got it the hardest, they're suffering the hardest, and everybody else's life is just fucking roses. And that, what I would say that we said at Margie camp, when we were talking to people and we were saying, you know, listen, at the end of the day, whether you're elite or the guy who, you know, signed up and hasn't trained a single day, and now you're going to try to survive tomorrow, like, you don't even care if you finish, you just don't want to die.
Right.
All of those people in that spectrum, we're all fucked. Every one of us. Like, when you're out there, you need to remember, and this is what should hopefully break barriers and bring people together. No matter how fucked you're feeling, that guy next to you, he's that fucked too. Or that woman, she's fucked too. We're all going through the same stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that if you can accept that and see that you're not alone in it, I personally think that is the beginning, because it gives you sort of a brotherhood or a sisterhood, or just, you know, a human connection. Like, this is just all hard shit that we need to get through. And really, what you need to do is reach out to people, surround yourself with good people that'll get you through it.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't go it alone.
You can't go it alone. You can't.
Yeah.
You can't. I mean, you can try, and that probably doesn't end well.
No,
it does not. We're,
yeah.
In fact, I had written down here, because I saw that question, I had written down, the first thing I wrote down is, you're not alone.
Yeah. Well, you just did it. You didn't read it, but that was what came out of you naturally, right? So
yeah, it's you're not alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the thing. I think, like you talked about, stuff that's hidden becomes cancerous. It can kind of creep in. And there's like an element of, I think, when people are in difficult things, some of it's self-inflicted and some of it's not, but it's regardless, it feels like a moment of weakness. A lot of times, like, I'm not capable, or this thing's overcoming me, or whatever the narrative is in people's minds.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of like hiding that can happen, because you don't want to show the weakness. You don't want to show fragility. And as a result, there's nobody available to help you, because they don't know you're in it. And then two, you think you're the only one going through it. Like, but when you start talking about it, you find out really quickly, oh my gosh, there's like 100 other people that have been in this situation. And like, I'm not alone. And I have somebody I can count on, and somebody's been through this and it ends, you know, like that's what I love about this podcast is like, this allows that narrative that people have of like, I'm the only one to break really quickly. Right. Because they'll hear it.
So. Yeah. If I, you know, reference back to the races. So we're very active with the events on Facebook.
Yeah.
And there's two groups. Crusher has a private group on Facebook and Margie Gessick has a private group on Facebook. The, what you're talking about here, what we're talking about with, you know, you not being alone and sharing vulnerability and stories, the community that we have, which is literally thousands of people right now, it's amazing to sit in after the events, read the stories, all the self-doubt that they went into the event with. I mean, it is mind-blowing then how, as they're sharing their stories and then other people read them and they're like, well, shit, this, that woman looks just like me. Like her life, you know, is just like mine. And look at what she's doing. And she feels just like me. And there's just that human connection.
Yeah.
And people sharing that then helps them get over and through that. And it helps them do some just incredibly amazing things that they never thought they could do.
That's so cool that you guys are able to facilitate that for people too.
Yeah, it's what we should be doing.
Yeah, that's awesome. So last question for you, Todd, before we wrap up, and I ask everybody this, but what's a hard thing that you're in the middle of right now?
The hard thing we're in the middle of right now is we actually didn't touch on it a bunch, but the whole reason the nonprofit was started was to serve children.
Mm.
And we have now nine youth adventure teams across the Midwest, so in three states.
Yeah.
We're teaching kids how to do hard things and get out of their comfort zone and all the things we talked about today.
Yeah.
We're applying these lessons in age-appropriate ways to youth in nine communities. And the hardest thing right now in front of us is meeting the demand.
Really?
Meeting the demand and the need. We've got a couple doctors on our on our board of directors. We regularly speak to people in the education system. You know, whether we're talking about tech and the impact that phones and, you know, Instagram and Facebook and all this stuff is having on kids, or if you just get down and talk about like, okay, this pandemic has, you know, reduced childhood play and physical activity by whatever, 30-40%. The statistics aren't good right now.
Yeah.
So this youth adventure team model that we have, which is non-competitive, we're not teaching kids to compete against each other. We're teaching them to compete against themselves. It's the mantra is you versus you. And you're going to be with 10 other kids following that same framework and that same growth mindset. And since we're not pitting them against each other and success isn't finite, because all you got to do is be your best and beat your best day. It is amazing. The impact it's having for those kids, the families, the volunteers, and the communities that it's in.
Yeah.
We started Dan in 14. It was me and five kids. And this year we are in nine communities. We had 300 volunteer leaders and 700 kids.
Wow.
So
that's amazing.
Yeah. It's just how do you grow? How do you scale? And not break it.
I'm sure you'll break it at some point, and then you just got to be able to fix it real quick. So
yeah.
Oh man, wow. Well, for anybody that's listening to this, and you know, maybe they've never heard of 906 Adventures, or maybe something you said really, you know, struck a chord with them, and they're curious, they've got questions, they want to get involved, whatever it is. Like, how do people get in touch with you, follow what you're doing, and everything that's involved in 906?
You know, we're on Facebook. They could look up 906 Adventure Team. We have a website. You could go to 906adventureteam.com. They could also just reach out to me. My email is todd@906adventureteam.com. And I am
two D's.
Two D's. Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to field any questions, have any conversations at any time. I'm accessible pretty much around the clock.
Awesome. Yeah, man. Well, hey, I'll just say it's been really fun talking to you. I love what you guys are doing, that you're working with kids, that you're pushing people out of their comfort zones, that you're facilitating opportunities for growth, and you know, that it's growing, that like that actually is making a difference in people's lives is really cool. So thanks for doing all that. That's, I mean, very few people are. And so thank you for serving your community well.
Yeah. Well, thanks for giving me a chance to talk about it. And, you know, hopefully we end up, somebody hears this and they're like, hey, we need an adventure team in our community, and they reach out. Maybe we can make it happen.
Yeah, that'd be incredible. And if that does happen, I want to know about it. That'd be pretty cool.
Yes, I will make sure that you
do. So cool. Well, Todd, man, thanks again for coming on. It was awesome to hear your story.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to the Do Hard Things podcast by Elite SRS. We hope you are encouraged today and have a newfound hope to persevere. Be sure to subscribe for more great episodes and conversations. And if you ever want to watch an episode, check out our YouTube channel at www.youtube.com/ElitesRS. Have a blessed day.